Guitar Radio Show.
Over the years, we've had episodes that didn't work out very well. Corrupt files, digital mishaps, whatever. So those episodes didn't get aired. So this year, during the pandemic, I went ahead and had those files sent off to somebody who could help me uncorrupt them. Some of them were successful. So we're going to be airing, finally, these lost episodes. And these are going to be episodes of some artists that I'd really like you to hear. So what we've done, though, is slightly different, is obviously when they were here to usually promote something. But what we've done is gone ahead and put in their latest music to help them promote that. And at the very end, some of their older music that they were actually here for originally. So enjoy the lost episodes.
Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should.
All right, folks, welcome back to Guitar Radio Show. Our next guest here today is somebody who, after hearing Boston's first album, realized that he wanted to do music. And you know what? That's pretty damn cool, because it's really a perfect album. We're going to talk about that a little bit today. But we have with us a really incredibly talented guitar player, but holy cow, can this guy sing? And he's a great songwriter as well, Mr. Grayson Earhart. How are you, Grayson? Welcome to Guitar Radio Show.
I'm good. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, my pleasure. I heard. Oh God, what was it? I had heard. What was the track? Oh, Manifest. And a ways back, and I was like, wow, this is super cool. And I love how you're one of those few guys that do your style of acoustic guitar playing, but a lot of the guys who do that style don't sing.
Right.
And certainly don't bring a voice like yours to it, which is very rich and
well, thanks.
And full. Well, you know, your first couple of things that you came out with, it was very little singing and more playing, and you do both really well. What was your decision to start saying, you know, hey, I think I'm going to do a whole lot more singing as well?
Well, it kind of started out, and honestly, I've been doing the singing and playing the percussive guitar playing for a long time before I had even released anything. And I remember there was only like two or three people that did it. And one of which, I remember my buddy showed me that John Gomm Passion Flower song. And I was like, no, someone beat me to the punch. And I felt really bummed out because I felt like I wasn't like the first person to do it, even though I felt like I had been doing it for a really long time. And I mean, John Gomm's a lot older than me, so he probably was even doing it before me. But I remember just like realizing that there was this lack of singing with this style of guitar playing. Mm-hmm. And I also noticed that a lot of people were kind of using it more as like, look at all these crazy techniques I can do on the guitar and then sing at the same time, almost like a metal artist would.
Right.
And I wanted to take it more in a songwriting direction. Uh-huh. Where, you know, not only are these techniques like pretty contemporary, but it's not so over the top to the point where it's like super distracting, but it actually kind of embellishes and enhances the song.
Mm-hmm.
So my decision-making to go further into the singing side of it and actual songwriting side of it was, I guess, kind of just realizing that, man, just doing this like acoustic instrumental thing isn't really like, to me, that exciting anymore because there's just so many people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many people doing it incredibly well. And I felt like I already had this thing. I was like in love with, I was absolutely obsessed with singing at the time. And I was like, man, I really want this to kind of be my thing. And so, I mean, even more recently, I've written one instrumental song probably in the past like 2, maybe 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it takes me so damn long to actually release music. But I don't know. It's kind of, they're more meditation pieces for me, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting to see your evolution. If you go check them out. I mean, if you have an iTunes account, go check out the evolution of this artist. It's really interesting to see where you've gone and how I think you probably always did. I mean, if you love the first Boston album, you have a pop, you have a pop sensibility.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's, I mean, you know, people a lot of times will say like, oh, don't say that. That's almost like it's like a bad word almost. A pop is a bad word. It's not. It doesn't necessarily, some of the greatest, records have been pop songs. You know, I mean, right. You know, we just lost Peter Tork the other day, the bass player from the Monkees, mm-hmm. right? I mean, he was in one of the best pop bands that ever existed. They were great songs. They didn't always write all their own songs, but they were great songs. And it's interesting because with you, I've seen you looking at your career, you've kind of developed your pop sensibility in a very eclectic way. Does that make sense?
It does, and it's very true. And I really look up to, you know, these artists that are not only obviously technically proficient at their instruments or voice or whatever, but they use it in a way that's digestible. But like also musicians can listen to it and be like, oh, that's super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Boston really was for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, the vocalist of that band, like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
So incredible. And I mean, the guitarist is like, really, Tom Schultz is like, I need to meet this man. I still haven't. One of the reason, if not maybe like the second reason I started playing guitar. And I just have that kind of like nerdy, but also, I guess like curious and kind of DIY mentality that he has. And I'm realizing that like more and more as time goes on, like holy shit, man, this guy actually really shaped the kind of musician I was, just because I looked up to him so much.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting, you know, and I would have never, ever, if someone would have said, you know, try and guess who his, one of his main influences are, I would have never in a million years, based on the music that you play and the songs that you write, I would have never guessed that. But at the same time, there is I do understand it. And I think that's great that you were able to not necessarily cop what he was doing or that even the songwriting structure for that matter, but and really found your own thing. Now I know it was Andy McKee. You were a bit of a metalhead, right? First,
I was, yeah. Yeah,
and you were playing metal guitar, and you heard Andy McKee, and that set you off on. You went down that rabbit hole with that type of that type of guitar playing. And you're right. You're totally right when you say there's so many people. It is saturated with people doing that type of work.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's not a bad thing. It's just it really does make it difficult to get through all the white noise and have somebody hear what you're doing and hear why what you're doing is special. You know, it's sort of like what David Lee Roth once said. He said about all the bands in the 80s, you know, they were all dressing alike and sounding alike and looking alike, and it was very incestuous. And he says, you know what happened?
Right.
He said, you know what happens with incest? You end up with, you know, messed up kids. So,
so I did not know he said that.
Yeah, and he actually used another word, but I'm not going to use the word because it's a poor word. But, you know, it's just really interesting to see where you've gone, and you've got this new record, new release came out in 2018. It's called Earthship, and it is truly a departure from your previous work, more electric. It's a full band production, but yet you're the centerpiece, and it is you. So I don't think. I mean, do you think? I mean, maybe for the hardcore guitar players that have dug what you've done before, they might be a little like, what's this, man? Dude, what did you do? Are you getting that? Is that happening?
You know, with a departure like that, I mean, it's probably pretty obvious that I've had a lot of those thoughts. And honestly, I've gotten those comments, of course. You know, the people that like feel like it's necessary to tell me, you know, what they prefer. But I've also, you know, it's like, why'd you have to? Like, I don't care. Like, I'm just gonna make art, and like, if you like it or not, cool. You know,
right.
Just like the YouTube comment culture, it's just kind of hilarious to me. But
yeah.
I think, you know, for me, I've been putting out the most eclectic collection of music since forever. Like, I had a reggae kick for a little bit. Uh-huh. Like, you know, I do stuff with hip hop artists every now and then. And like, you know, I've had most of my like success through this fingerstyle acoustic arena. But, you know, if you dig into my stuff, which it sounds like you have, you can hear all of these other genres, and I've also released some songs that were like, you know, like a country bluegrass song is like my second most popular song. And to me, I see that and I'm like, it doesn't matter what I release. Like if it's a good song, it's a good song, you know, it doesn't really matter, but yeah, sure. There's going to be like those guitar purists that are like, you know, wanting me to play. Well, there's guitar purists that want me to play just purely instrumental, and that's never going to happen.
Right.
And there's people that are like, I wish you'd sing more when I play instrumental. So it's like, I don't even care. You know,
well, you know, it's funny.
Do me.
It, that's what you have to do. You do. And you know what? And then eventually the right people will catch on. But, you know, and it's funny because I mean, with this show, I'm always trying to get people to just to kind of take on the buffet table mindset. That, you know, when you go to some place and there's a buffet, are you just going to load up on Swedish meatballs? No. I mean, are you going to walk back to your table with a giant heaping plate of just Swedish meatballs?
Yeah, no. I'm just going to grab everything I possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, that's what music is like. Music is a buffet. Art, all art is a buffet, is this wonderful cornucopia of, you know, possibilities. And when I hear something like, have you heard the latest Gary Clark Jr. record?
I haven't.
You really got to go listen to it. It's really, really astounding. I did a blog for it. And it's out there, and you can read that too. It is so interesting, and it goes all over. I mean, it's R&B, it's yeah. rock, it's indie, it's punk, it's all over. There's a reggae tune on there. I mean, you know, and to me, that's like, it gives me the opportunity that I might hear something in the way he's putting it over, or the way that you're putting it over, that I might not have heard before, and it might inspire me. So for me, that's how I look at it. And I'm trying to get other people to understand that too, but it's very difficult because people are very set in their ways.
Right.
You know.
And I think people, you know, what I've been kind of struggling with too is like when I went to go write some of the songs on Earthship, I was like, the fuck is this? Like, I don't like Time to Move On. It's like a folk song, but then it has electric guitar in it.
Right.
But like, that's kind of proggy.
Yeah.
And then it has like, it just starts going into this full drum kit vibe at the end with like chorus vocals. And I just had no idea what it was. And, you know, my mixing engineer, he was just like, this is like, I just don't really know what to do with this other than like make this, I guess, like sound right. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's because like you have these standards and these kind of these rules to follow technically with like songwriting, like folk, you know, the rule is to like be very sparse and organic and mm-hmm. authentic mm-hmm. and it's like I wrote this folk song that's like so unbelievably the opposite of that. And that's exciting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think rule one has got to be
the popular song. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I even care. It just seems like the exploration and the journey is so gratifying to me.
Yeah. Well, don't you think rule one has to be there are no rules?
I mean, it's still something I'm trying to get over, to be honest. Like, because I think rules are good. You know, it's like, you know, like thinking purely, I guess, theoretical here, like with theory. You know, you have a scale. If you start breaking the rules of the scale, you know, you better really know what you're doing. And so breaking rules kind of unknowingly can be kind of a mistake. Mm-hmm. Same with like, you have these song structures, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, like the most common pop structure. But that's actually a really great like limit. And one of my favorite quotes is creativity is I'm forgetting the quote now. it's compensating for the lack of resources. So putting limits on what you're doing actually makes you more creative,
right?
Yeah. So rules can actually make you more creative. But
that's an interesting way of looking at it. I never really looked at it that way. That's kind of interesting. It's interesting. So almost being a minimalist in some respects.
You can be super creative.
Yeah.
And like, you know, as someone who wants to just, like my process, I guess, I just throw as much into a song as I possibly can. You know, here's like a, you know, a mandolin, here's a synth, here's a guitar, you know, here's three more guitars, you know, auxiliary percussion. And if you don't limit yourself to timbres and, you know, instruments and actually have a vision for it, you can just keep like essentially wasting your time on a song and just keep adding stuff until you have this like kind of wall of sound. And one, I really like the kind of mentality of like just one bass sound, one guitar sound, maybe another guitar sound, but like it had, maybe that comes in at the chorus or something, you know, just very, very specific and limiting yourself to that like tone, and really diving into that rather than, just adding and adding and adding. Yeah, that's a tangent.
Yeah, no, it's good. That's good. I'm thinking about what you're saying, and I never really thought of it in that way. That's kind of cool. Let's dive into this record a little bit. I have a favorite track, but I'll save that for last.
Okay.
So you did for the lead-in track on the record. It's a track called "I Will." There's an electric version here, but you also released an acoustic version as well.
Yeah.
And so what was the impetus behind that?
So that's a funny question, especially for that one, because it's seriously so similar. But I'm planning on releasing an entire acoustic EP version
of this. Okay.
And I released "I Will" acoustic as like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, I had this like crazy idea to just release the acoustic version like 2 weeks after the electric version. And this is me learning my lesson on this. Like, people didn't have enough time to actually just dive into the regular EP to then appreciate the acoustic. So I've just kind of left "I Will" out, the acoustic one, because I did that first. I just left it out. I was like, it's already out there, whatever. But yeah, I really wanted to do like a brand new take in this acoustic thing. And I guess it's kind of my self-consciousness of knowing how much of a departure these songs are from my other stuff. So I was like, you know, maybe this is a way to like bring in my current audience into this new direction. So yeah, that's kind of the mentality behind it.
Well, that's cool. I want to jump around a little bit. So, "Time to Move On." You had mentioned it earlier, but what's the story there? Is there any true life experience there?
Absolutely. And you know, I think a lot of people. I'm not going to assume for you, but some people that have listened to that song think that it's about a relationship. And technically it is, but personally it's about my relationship with making art.
I thought so.
And yeah, and how unbelievably frustrating it can be, or how but also how rewarding it is when you get to the end of it and then go, oh, okay, now it's time to move on. Now it's next thing.
Yep.
You know, it's like just kind of like disregarding how much time and effort you put into something and how much passion you put into something. And then when it's out, you're just like, you're done with it almost. Like emotionally.
That's cool. It's great. I love that track. It's another thing about this record. It's really full. If you go ahead and listen to your catalog, you know, everything has been very sparse, has been very ambient in its own way. And now this record is like this full on, you know, I mean, honestly, this is a record that any one of these tracks could be, you know, top 40 radio right now.
Thanks, man.
Right now, in my opinion, because it's very modern. It's really, I mean, was that a conscious thing, or was it just kind of like, this is what's coming out of me?
You know, it's not that it was a conscious thing. I think it was just a place that I was at. I had been in this kind of, I'm going to try to say this in a positive way, but I was writing super, super technical music and really metaphorical lyrics. I was in this place in my creative process, I guess, and compositional habits were just like super technical, super intense, dark, metaphoric. And I kind of wanted to just do the absolute opposite. And one of the most effective ways I've found to achieve balance is to go to extremes. You literally just can't, you don't even know where the middle is if you don't know where the outsides are. So I guess it was conscious in the way that, like, you know, I was actively trying to do the opposite of what I've always done. But what came out, you know, clearly had to be pop and, you know, more simplistic, but I've found that it's incredibly difficult for me to really dumb it down past a certain extent.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I don't think it's really that simplistic. If you really listen to it and all the basket weaving that's going on with all the different instruments, it's not simplistic at all.
No, it's not. It's very true. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's... I wanted to make it subtly complex, I guess. And I think it was a little less subtle than I wanted, but yeah.
Well, I dig it. Tell Me No. Now, are you doing the electric guitars on here as well?
I am, yeah.
Okay, so was that, I mean, had you been still playing electric guitar throughout all these years since, you know, with your focus on acoustic guitar?
Yeah. You know, electric guitar was like, honestly, my skills on that were a lot more developed than my acoustic guitar. Mainly because in high school, I just rarely ever played acoustic. And, you know, playing metal and all this, I don't know, I was in a rock band for like 4 years during college. And so I never really stopped. And I was like jamming with people. So I still had all that gear, and, you know, guitar is still tuned to standard tuning. But yeah, it's funny because when people come over to my house, they're like, are any of these in standard? I'm like, that's a tall order, man. Very tall order. But some people just come over and just strum every guitar, and they'll be just like cracking up the whole time. I have one guitar tuned to Baghdad just because of the name. It's actually a pretty cool tuning.
That's great.
I've been still playing electric guitar for a while.
So it wasn't too foreign for you then to go into the studio and play these tracks on an electric?
You know, no, but what was foreign was, like, feeling like I needed to refrain from trying to do everything. Because with my acoustic playing, you know, I'm doing the rhythm, the melody, and the harmony, bass, you know, everything. And just giving it space, that was actually really, really challenging for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. To let the other instruments do that basket weaving that we were talking about. Yeah. That's interesting. So how did you deal with that?
You know, I had to just kind of spend more time, like a lot more time, honestly. And I had to actually write everything. A lot of the stuff in the box per se, which is writing it, you know, in Logic at the time. I was using Logic and, you know, thinking about it more objectively, I couldn't, I couldn't get in a room with musicians and focus on both of those things of like, okay, I'm performing and I'm also, you know, I'm making sure I'm playing the right part, but also, you know, objectively listening to what we're doing and seeing what's missing or if something's too much. Mm-hmm. That's so hard to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm already multitasking with the guitar and vocals. It's just like, I can't think about all these things at the same time. Mm-hmm. So having them in the box was really helpful for that process.
That's cool. So my favorite track is Introvert.
Cool, man. Me too.
I really like that song a lot. Tell me about that session. What was that session like?
Would you like me to so by session, what do you necessarily mean? Because
when you went to record it.
When I went to finally record it?
Yeah.
I wanted everything on the record to have this kind of, this, I guess, like more real feel, like live feel. So I wanted the bass and the drums to be tracked together. And on that song, that was quite the challenge for them. Because it is pretty complex, but, so we got that done, the bass and drums tracked together. And then, the guitar was like, I was pretty tedious. And that was kind of a lesson again in, you know, what to leave out. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I had all these songs demoed, and I had an idea of what I wanted it to sound like, but when I took it to the actual engineer, he was like, oh, we should add this and this and this. He kind of took on a producer role on it, which was really cool because, you know, I guess I was so, I had heard the song a million times at that point, you know, mm-hmm. It's nice to have someone else kind of in the room that's like fresh, but he had a lot of, really great ideas. And guitar tones that we used were really interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things that really drew me in, too.
That's awesome. I kind of wanted to do this thing, and you probably heard it on Tell Me No as well, where I wanted these kind of like little arpeggio things going on.
Yes.
Like little distractions, I guess. And
they're ornaments.
So ornaments, that's a great way to put it. But one thing that, I think a lot of people will overlook when they hear that song is what the bridge actually is. And that's actually me slapping harmonics. You might, since you're a guitar player, you might've picked that up, mm-hmm. but, I haven't actually really heard that done on a rock record. Someone actually taking these acoustic percussive fingerstyle techniques and putting that into a rock setting, because that style is actually, it's seriously, super energetic. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was like a great place for that technique to come out in a rock song. And I've been trying to get that, these styles and these techniques into rock songs for so long. I played in this band called Aspen Hourglass for like 4 years, and that's like all I tried to do. And it's kind of nice having all of that experience and knowing kind of what I could and couldn't do to be able to bring it, into this session. And honestly, I thought that this was like the absolute first time that it ever worked in a recording. And I remember hearing back that bridge and I was just like, holy shit, that is huge. Sounds so sick. But yeah. And then I don't know, it's kind of, vocally, Chris likes to just kind of max me out. And, get me to do, Chris is the audio engineer.
Right.
Get me to do absolutely everything I possibly can do, full capacity vocally on it. So had me do low harmonies, high harmonies, bunch of cool, you know, like oohs and ahs and stuff like that. And just, yeah, kind of took me to my limit on that. But,
That's important. You know, I mean, to, I think it's great that, that you know, there's an engineer or a producer that is there to push, because you know, when that, I mean, it's like, you know, I can't remember how, I think it was, 34 takes or something ridiculous like that, that the Beatles did on Twist and Shout, a vocal, the lead vocal. And, you know, John Lennon was getting hoarser and hoarser as they did it. And he was getting, he was getting pissed off at George Martin. But George knew that if he pushed him and pushed him, that he would get that raspy, gravelly thing that, that we ended up getting as that last take, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that story. That is so true.
Yeah. So, you know, that's great when you've got somebody that's, that, that knows enough that, okay, I've got to push them to reach their full potential. Because sometimes we're so knee deep in the hoopla that we don't know where we're even at the moment. We're just kind of like focused on this one thing, but we're not seeing the whole picture because we're too damn close to it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I've realized that I absolutely need that. When I get so deep into a session or a project, it's just hard for me to continue to work my ass off.
Yeah.
You just need someone else that's like fresh and like, all right, here are my ideas. Mm-hmm. I'm going to push you guys to your limits kind of. And knowing someone like Chris, who's comfortable with doing that. And he's recorded pretty much all, like most of my acoustic stuff besides my first EP. But I recorded with him like Manifest and Cave and a lot of the first things I released through Candy Rat, and you know, got my first real taste of I guess any sort of like massive viewership. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, Chris did me well, you know. Because it's not like things were really that different from my first EP.
Mm-hmm.
They were just recorded better. Mm-hmm. And I had an engineer that pushed me to my max. And so I really do owe Chris a lot for, you know, making sure everything that's that I can do is in the recording, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, they're in many respects, they're another member of the band, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like George Martin always used Jeff Emmerich, you know. I think there was only maybe one album that Jeff didn't engineer for the Beatles because he got called off into something else. But, you know, for the most part, it was George Martin and Jeff Emmerich that were in the studio turning the knobs and pushing the boys to where they needed to go. And that's just one band out of however other stories are just like that, you know?
Right. So, I think there's just a certain amount of recalibration that has to happen when you start working with someone else, you know?
Oh, God, and yeah.
It can push back schedules. It can really like drag out a project way longer than it needs to be.
Yeah. If it's somebody that you have to really learn about and you don't have a clue, you're not really kind of settled in, it's like being in a dark room looking for a light switch.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And, you know, I mean, just the experience that comes along with working with someone for so long too is, you know, I mean, he's tried so many different mics on my voice, so many different mics on my guitar. You know, he's heard my frustrations, also been with me through my successes and achievements. And he has the full picture. It's hard to just like start working with someone else and be like, okay, this is everything I got going on. You know, here's my entire past. Here's what I I'm looking forward to doing,
mm-hmm.
and have them just immediately know what to do, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So with a full band thing that you did here, is there going to be live shows of this?
Absolutely. So my intent is to slow down the live performances that I do solo. I really like the camaraderie of being in a band. I've always wanted to be in a band.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't necessarily want it to be this way, where I'm a solo artist.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of just the circumstances that I'm in that ended up like this. So in May, mid-May, I'm going through the Midwest with a trio. And it's the drummer that played on the record, but also my brother is going to be playing bass.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we're going to do the full band thing, but there's also going to, I'm going to play acoustic as well. Probably mm-hmm. open up the set acoustically, play all the songs that people probably want to hear. And then slowly evolve into the band sound and with a bang.
Cool. I think that's great. It's going to be interesting because, you're covered pretty well on YouTube. And, folks, you go to YouTube and just type in Grayson Erhard, and you're going to find plenty of stuff. Stuff posted by you, posted by other people. There's even the Stevie Wonder thing. There's all that. All that stuff is there, right? And, folks, you go to guitarradioshow.com in the show notes. And I'll post some of those videos, particularly the Stevie Wonder one. You'll enjoy that. And you can also go to GraysonErhard.com. That's E-R-H-A-R-D.com. And check out. It's a really pretty good website over there. And you got a lot going on, a lot of information. But it's going to be great to see a full band out there on YouTube. Because I'm sure that's going to happen in a hurry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. And when do you guys kind of get out there and start showing your wares?
So I'm planning 4 tours this year. And I don't think I'm going internationally this year. But I'm just going to focus on the United States, probably do Midwest. I'm definitely doing Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly mid-May to the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the summer, probably around June or July, I'll hit the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the fall, hit the East Coast. And then in the winter, I'm going to hit the Babel Belt.
Cool. You think you might have some Texas dates then?
I might, yeah.
All right. That'd be cool. We'd love to see you in Austin. I think folks would dig you.
Yeah, I mean, I love Austin.
Yeah.
Can't wait to come back.
It's a great town. So beyond all that, what's next after that? You got any long-range plans?
So I'm currently working. I'm trying to – call me crazy, but I'm trying to release, 15 songs this year.
Wow.
And, yeah, man, I stockpiled. I've been stockpiling for a while.
So you're going to do singles?
Probably EPs.
Okay.
You know, three EPs. So I'm going to release a 5 song, 5 covers,
mm-hmm.
and then 5, brand new songs, and then 5, the Earthship EP totally stripped down into acoustic.
Oh, neat. Okay.
And so, yeah, those are the 3 releases hopefully this year. And then after that, I'm gonna try to do a full length.
Right.
I've been saying that for quite a while, and I think I just need to do it.
It's a hard sell. It's a hard sell now that especially with more people that I talk to all the time. They're like, yeah, I'm doing EP or I'm doing singles because people have such a short attention span. Because the world such as it is, and the devices that we have acquired now they take all our attention, and everybody out there is vying for that attention. So it's really difficult. Yeah. It's really, really difficult. You know, I really, you know, and me and many other people thought in the early days of it all, the whole DIY thing was really going to be great because it put complete and utter control in the artist's hand, which is really important. I think it's important anyway.
Absolutely.
But what happened was, you know, back to that David Lee Roth thing, you know, more and more people learning how to use GarageBand. You know, it turned into it's like the Wild West. And, you know, and then, you know, and I think the streaming thing, although it's a great way to check out music, it's not the way I listen to music per se. So, like, I'll check it out and they'll say, oh, that's really good. I like it enough to buy it, so I'm going to buy that.
Oh, that's cool, man.
You know, and I'm always telling people, you know, don't steal it, buy it. Because, you know, in a sense, if you're streaming the same thing over and over and over again, you've stolen it, essentially.
Right.
You know.
Well, at least stream it, you know?
Yeah.
The very least.
Yeah, at the very least, right. But then if you like it enough, go buy it. Support the artist. This way the artist can make more of that stuff that you like. It's cyclical, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know? Man, this is a great record. I really, really like it, and I can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. Those were great questions, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Had a great time with you, man.
Cool. Folks, go to GraysonEhrhardt.com. You can check him out on YouTube. He's all over the place. And you should definitely check out, go to GuitarRadioShow.com and check out that video of him and Stevie Wonder. It is a trip. It's really, really great. The record is called Earthship, and it is super, super sonically pleasing. I love it.
It's really good.
Hey, man, thanks for being on the show. You hold on 1 second here, but we're going to sign off.
Check out Guitar Radio Show on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, GuitarRadioShow.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Find Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, if you like the artists you hear on Guitar Radio Show, don't just stream their music, buy it.